concept of the Attorney General's office taking advantage of the new provision of House Bill 3 that allows the Attorney General to investigate election fraud. And we were advised, after a number of ongoing communication with that office, we were advised that they were set up and ready to have begin to explore that. And we submitted materials, to Bob's book on what happened in Ohio, a documentation of the exit poll discrepancy, and much information that worked its way into the news media lawsuit, and John Conyers' report to the Congress that was the factual basis for the challenge to the electoral vote, the Ohio electoral vote in January 2005. Within the last month or so, I was advised by that office that they, their question was, well, who do you want us to indict? And, they have limited staff. So their concept of looking at this from a criminal standpoint was not to convene a grand jury and to cast the net broadly, bring people in to explain what's going on, and use the grand jury process to investigate and narrow the focus into the question of who may have tampered with both votes. But rather, they wanted us to come to them with a more focused case. And advise them that we were going to, in that case, we were going to ask for a lifting of the stay and to proceed with a civil case in order to conduct discovery to be able to do that.
You should also note that very early on, we went to Washington and met with the House Judiciary Committee staff who agreed to come into Ohio in early March of 2007. And we had an agreement from Attorney General Mark Dan's office, but for whatever reason, perhaps other pursuits, the Attorney General's office never got back to us. So there was an agreement that John Conyers was reluctant to come in, and the Attorney General's office agreed because they knew Ohio, but it simply never happened. And particularly with the destruction of the ballot, that would have been important.
Yeah. So anyway, the other thing I'll mention is that I met with John Conyers within the last 2 weeks and made him aware of what we think we have in terms of new resources and new information, including the availability of someone with the expertise of Steve Spoonmore to assist the state, assist the Congress, and assist the court in understanding what we have to understand for purposes of better assuring the integrity of the 2008 election. The materials we passed out this morning are the motion that we filed this morning to lift the stay, explaining that we don't want to be disruptive, we want to be targeted, focused, and helpful, and we have communicated with the Attorney General's office and indicated to them that we are perfectly anxious, indeed, to make Mr. Spoonmore and other information available to them to help them do their job and see how they want to proceed in context of this litigation and other things. And we've also given you two letters. They're called document hold notices. If you recall, we earlier did this with the Ohio Chamber of Commerce. We sent a document hold notice to Matt Karras, who has represented the U.S. Chamber, and asked them to hold documents relating to their activities to use corporate money to influence Supreme Court elections. And we've asked, as part of a prospective claim under the Ohio Corrupt Practices Act, and also a letter to U.S. Attorney General Michael Mukasey, asking that he advise the federal government to hold emails from Karl Rove. that we think is an individual who has been at the center of both the use of corporate money to attack state attorneys general in their elections and candidates for Supreme Court in their elections in the states, and also in the manipulation of the election process. And so we're asking that documents be held. We express concern about the reports that Mr. Rhodes destroyed his emails and suggested that we want the duplicates that should exist under the control of the Secret Service to be sure that those are retained, as well as on the receiving end in the department and elsewhere, that those documents are retained for purposes of this prospective litigation, which we anticipate Mr. Rhodes would be identified as having engaged in corrupt, corrupt activity specifically affecting the situation here in Ohio.
And also, you should point out that the Ohio election results were outsourced to the old Pioneer Bank building in Chattanooga, Tennessee in 2004, which was on the same server as those White House emails and run by a man named Mike Connell of GovTech. So we'd like to discuss exactly how the Ohio operation was outsourced. And it's also been reported, of course, that he's been tied to the firewall and security in the U.S. Congress as well.
Yeah. What Bob is pointing out is that we, as counsel for the plaintiffs, have recently been introduced to some phenomenal paralegal and research resources in addition to Mr. Spoonamore, and we think we're now in a position to go after the issues of election integrity in a very targeted way, as opposed to a casting a fishing net. We're able to do some rifle shots. There's a guy named Michael Connell who is he designs websites and he manages the information technology. Interestingly, for the Bush campaign the Bush campaign of 2000 and the Bush campaign of 2004. Simultaneously, he was doing IT work for the state of Florida in 2000 and for the Office of the Secretary of State in 2004. And just think of this. Here's a person who is an instrument of a major presidential campaign, simultaneously serving as setting up the hosting of the votes, Ohio election, in which that campaign is competitive. We're not saying that he did anything wrong in the sense of misconduct, but we're saying that these conflicting roles race and issues. The other important thing about Mr. Connell is that he, by virtue of his involvement in a variety of these roles that we're concerned with, as a witness, he can provide a perspective. In one person that can bring a great deal of information together to better inform folks what happened and what some of the vulnerabilities are and where some of the data security breaches may have occurred. Not that he caused, but that as an observer of the system or a manager of the system, that he could identify as, this is something that could have been breached and could have created a problem. Stephen, do you want to, I said this to more than one person. I assume you've probably heard it. Mr. Spoonamore, in my opinion, is the best witness that I've ever encountered in my 38 years of law practice. So with that introduction, Stephen, do you have any comments you want to make?
Well, I'm not sure how many people you've met in your 38 years of law practice. But yes, to clarify for those that I can't see or gather from, what I do professionally is I build systems that look for fraud. So if you've ever had your phone ring, it's MasterCard Corporation, one of your banks, asking you to make the charge.
to answer any questions, and Mr. Swinmore is available to answer any questions.
So how will your discovery moving forward differ then? Which results will you help? My question is, with your assistance now, how will the discovery that's already existed in this case begin to differ? Will it be more targeted, more technical?
Well, what Stephen has said to us is that when you have this clear indicator of fraud, you know, a clear pattern. Why get distracted by other things? There may have been, you know, 1,000 things that happened. But when you've got this clear pattern, why not focus on that and make sure you resolve it? In our original case in the Ohio Supreme Court, the Moss versus Bush, the core of our case was exactly what Mr. Swinmore is talking about. Because in those 14 counties where what was called the Connolly anomaly, where the down-ticket candidates got more votes than Kerry, that, if you adjust for that anomaly or that situation, it is enough votes to have changed the outcome of the election, which is the burden of the plaintiffs in an election contest. So the focus of our discovery or the focus of our efforts in cooperation with the Secretary of State would be to find out who was responsible for that. If it's the Rapp family and the programming of the tabulators, we need to know that so that the Rapp family will be closely monitored, if not put in jail, before the 2008 election. Go ahead, Stephen.
Okay. I'm a computer systems architect, so the law enforcement elements of it, I'm not clear on how it improves the discovery at this point. I think that there's an enormous concern that most of the parties who might should have. Looking at this from a banking fraud investigation, it's very clear where we would have begun, where it's Secret Service or the private banks or the local credit card company we would have been knocking on the doors and seeing you the next day. But, you know, subsequently with hard drives pulled, a variety of things, 3 years of time passed, I'm not quite clear exactly what happens at this point, but it was certainly my understanding as recently as it was validated by somebody. They still have changed the contract to program any of these tabulators. Well, there it is.
Well,
it really doesn't matter if you have no verifiable results. We have lines of people, set machines, even if the text machines are programmed correctly, we have no idea if they're working correctly. Once all of those machines are loaded and taken the memory cards out of them, you really have no idea what's on each memory card, and they're loaded into a tabulator that's supposed to count up the results. You don't know what's in the code of the tabulator, so how do you know if you're getting results correctly? Because by the time it aggregates all of those separate cards and reports to the group, it's completely invisible what happened. I mean, it's a frighteningly unauditable system.
Well,
the only way to determine if there's been fraud in a positive sense is to get the hard drive that was used that way and then forensically do an analysis of the code and the use of the code on that hard drive, which is a relatively straightforward thing to do. We do it all the time, bank investigations, which is why when in the Green Party recount, all of a sudden news broke of them driving around the state, pulling and swapping the hard drives. They should have been in handcuffs that day.
Well, and this point should be made, even though we're years from the election, and reports of this conduct, including a very clearly crafted letter by John Conyers pointing out the pattern involving Triad. Triad has never been interrogated under oath in either a civil or a criminal context, to the best of our knowledge. There was an FBI investigation launched at the request of John Conyers, and very shortly a letter coming back from the FBI to Mr. Conyers stating that they had found no problem. but it was very minimal, and it appears to be had been a politicized investigation, not a normal, serious investigation by the FBI.
But certainly not the central headquarters. I know that the FBI headquarters was the also distribution there as well. There's no hardware. So whatever that she was launched was best talk. And that it spoke to people but never
actually. I know that Mike Connell was associated with the Bush campaigns in 2004-2000. And you know that his association with Bush family in general goes back much further than that. What's his connection to the McCain?
Stephen may know better, but our understanding is Mr. Connell has been engaged to assist the design function for the
he's running all of the things what?
And again, he also asked in Congress when May was in charge of administration, obviously, so-called Chinese.
Kyle also worked with the front groups for the U.S. chain, the tobacco industry front groups, and starting in 2000 after the New Hampshire primary, there was an unleashed right, Washington-based lobby groups that created these phony grassroots groups that attacked candidates supposedly independently. We believe there is evidence of a coordinated campaign in which Mr. Rove is involved, in which Mr. Connell is an instrument, and again, this emphasizes his value as a witness in bringing some of this together without having to cast the net that broadly. He can sort of give us an overview of exactly what's going
on. Is anybody here aware of any member of Congress that is aware of the firewall that Mr. Connell has built?
There's two people that are very well aware of it, and one which we can't mention now because of possibility of hearings next month. There is one congressperson who wants the information delivered on paper and not electronically. The question is raised is, Mr. Connell and the Rapp family both have this problem. On the one hand, they're doing routine government work. On the other hand, they're involved in the most partisan campaign in history, and it's the exact same people. For example, I was on the Rapp website, that Triad, just last week, and they were selling a commemorative copy of the butterfly ballot that was poorly designed from Florida, and which they listed as a subsidiary company. So I would wonder why you would want those people anywhere around tabulators, why you wouldn't want that done by clearly nonpartisan IT company.
Mr. Spoonmar, do you know if the Rapp family are still involved in Ohio and or other states?
In Ohio and other states.
Yes, I believe they're involved in permanent. At one time, they had contracts for as many as 12 states, parts of Pennsylvania, Alaska, Alabama, I believe Mississippi and Georgia. So they had a number of other smaller contracts for pieces of other states, but they have a pretty wide relationship of programming the calculators associated with the both T-Bold and AccuVote systems.
Cliff, at one point this case was seeking to have a court oversight of the 2006 election. What is the relief you're seeking now as you're trying to get the case reopened?
Basically, if the court says, what is it you want to do if we reopen this case? We want to conduct some limited discovery, the deposition of Mr. Connell. We want to take the deposition of the key people in the Rapp family. And we are making available Mr. Spoonamore both informally and to the extent that the anyone wants to take his deposition and rely on his expertise for purposes of a legal proceeding. We intend to use him as a witness in whatever relief we seek in terms of things that need to be done in the 2008 election to protect its integrity. So we would, after a brief period of discovery, very targeted discovery, we would then move to amend our complaint to focus on targets and corrective actions or protective actions that are necessary for the protect the 2008 election. I want to add that we are not critical. The main thing that we sought in the 2006 election was judicial supervision to assure, you know, honest oversight. We see the 2006 election of Jennifer Bruner as providing honest oversight, and we are not in any way criticizing her honesty or competence. And what we are simply doing is saying, if the litigation process, if we can help through the litigation process to address some of these integrity vulnerabilities, that's what we want to do.
And I mean, quite frankly, we provided a variety of suggestions to the Secretary of State, many of which she's carried out. The problem is, some of them are broader, like ensuring having a security report. The problem is, with the Everest study, for example, it showed that the more vulnerable than the machines are the electronic polling databases. So what we would like to see is ongoing daily monitoring so you don't have what happened in 2004 where the Diebold machines glitched 10,000 people off the rolls, and there's no remedy just prior to the election. So I think also a background check. Who are the technicians that are, you know, the techno guys, I've seen them as election protection. They come in, they got a badge on them, they take the machines down, they mess with the memory cards, the hard drives. No one asks them who they are. No one does background checks on them. That's the type of detail I think we're working towards prior to the election.
And sometimes these technicians, electronic technicians, come in and have free access to the ballots. So to the extent that they might have been doing...
Sometimes they always have completely free access. I mean, what's functionally happening with Polk County now is the county level, they have everybody in the county has their votes. So let's make an assumption. Just I'm going to go ahead and grant that every single grandmother in this program, every single has free speech correctly, which we all know isn't true. And then we assume every single one of them worked perfectly. We assume the poll ballots worked perfectly. Let's assume all of them worked correctly. And what happens at the end of the day, all of those votes are thrown into a magic box with a little troll inside who's done the programming of how everything will be done before. The troll jumps out and says, these are your results. Ta-da! That's it. No
true that when a company like Diode, their electric system, when they sell their touchscreen equipment to the county, part of the free stuff is, I think, sort of the software election data that goes along with that. And really nobody knows how to operate that except the guys from the vendor themselves. So they come in and...
Correct. And they refuse to allow people to review it.
Yeah. Now, if going back to Mr. Gladwell, he contracted with GovTech, which I believe Mr. Connell is associated with. From what you told us and what you haven't told us, which you may know, is there any reason to suspect that there ultimately is some sort of super secret backdoor that both Secretary of State's office had, GovTech had, and any vendor had, any county electronic voting database that is untraceable, but we can't follow those breadcrumbs back to the source?
I will put my fraud investigator hat on, and I'm happy to follow up with stuff that I've worked on. So, I do often look at major global credit card fraud or money laundering fraud, and I have to look at all the electronics and say, how do they do that? And where are the bad guys? Where are we going to look for it? Looking at the IM 2004, this is what I see. I do not see that Mr. Connell was directly involved in the fraud. Mr. Connell was asked to build tools to aggregate all of the incoming county results at this facility in Lexington. Now, why would they want them consolidated there? The reason they want them consolidated before they went to the Secretary of State's office is so that they would have a few seconds of knowledge in advance that they could then communicate to county-level tabulators to tune the election. And over the course of the evening, as these 14 counties with the Connelly anomaly began to crop up toward the end of the voting, it looks specifically as if they were tuned from somewhere else. Now, in order to tune them, meaning they are changing their results to report back what they want reported, you would have to know what you want to tune them to, and someone would have had to have installed in those 14 counties the code to listen for their reported information and to change results to them. 1 or 2%, 3%, maybe 4 or 5% each, that's it. So the question of what code that is and how it was done needs to be done forensically by recovering the hard disks. That's it.
So let me ask you another question. The ultimate response. Go ahead.
Yeah, so from my perspective, if someone were to call me in, I wrote this out literally days after 2004 election. I said, this would immediately launch fraud. This is what appears to have happened. These elections were tuned. This is how it happened. But there wasn't anybody at that time who wanted to listen to that discussion.
Steve, would you make it? If you're going to make it clear that you did write it up and report it to the FBI?
Oh yeah, sure. I called a number of friends. I actually was involved with reporting of Ryan Steffel, the Georgia election in 2002. In the case of the Georgia election in 2002, I ended up finding a copy of the patch with the U.S. signatures that it stole in the last minute. And turned it over to him. This has been... None of us really want to confront the fact that it appears that there's an extremely coordinated effort by a very small group of people to tune elections, focus purely on control of the executive branch. I don't know, unfortunately, it always comes off a little... Wildly conspiratorially, but it's every time I see it, I'm like,
Well, let me ask you another question, and this sounds like the plot to the next Ocean's 11 movie, almost as a steal of money from the casinos in Vegas.
You're not to speak up a bit in any area.
All right, here's my question.
How did it steal from the casinos? Because their code is actually transparent. Our machines aren't.
But here's the response that every Secretary of State will give you, and every elected official will give you, both Republicans and Democrats will give you, and that the media has not followed up on. It's a bipartisan system, period.
No, it's not. It's not a bipartisan system. It's not the bipartisan side has no idea. This entire system is being programmed in secret by four or five programmers who have no oversight of anybody.
So the bipartisan nature, they're as out to lunch as anybody else. They have no idea.
Out to lunch. In my opinion, both sides have no freaking clue what they're talking about. I mean, I've met all of about three politicians in my entire life. Yes. And they simply just baffled. I mean, last year there's some great videotape, but the really last, at the final session, a bunch of the teams from Princeton and Ed Shelton and his whole team came down, and we used a touchscreen voting machine, and we ran a mock election between Benedict Arnold and George Washington for the first presidency. We had five people in the room vote. It was 5-0 Washington, but shockingly, when the tabulator ran the results, Benedict Arnold was the president by a 3-2 vote.
Spoon, just a spoon.
And by the way, everyone was like, but I suppose you put different bipartisan oversight in Hawaii, you know, I have 500 grandmothers to do this, but the person who programs the code inside this machine will decide its results, period.
Spoon, when you use the term tune, you are being euphemistic and suggesting that in Georgia 2002 and Ohio 2004, these modifications in the software were producing a change in the outcome of the election. Is that correct?
Correct. They were doing it in live time. See, the problem is when you're dealing with a network system, I mean, a lot of the times you get the manager saying, oh, the machines are not connected to the internet. Well, in some sense, that's true, but all of the tabulators are. So these tabulators, these central computers you take the cons back to, they're talking to the Secretary of State's computer with their head and other computers, potentially. And so when you start loading these vote results in, the results are coming in from a con, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's what the computer is doing. You could be tuning it. And we have the term tuning, meaning in the computer world, if you're changing results live across a network to get to a particular end, we call it tuning. These are tuning results.
Do the Democrats have a counterpart to Mike Donald? Do they have an IT guy?
Well, I'm not sure. It's interesting. Some other people have brought up. I mean, it's odd because I know Mike because Mike is involved in a variety of democracy advocacy programs overseas. So he and I are actually—he's a very, very smart network engineer, and he's also a very, very—he is a dedicated Christian believer. And he is a very loyal Republican partisan. So my exposure with him has been really just technician to technician, and I have no the calculator. A calculator, with this rich program, is going to come up with a result of Benedict Arnold. Trump has come up with. And as a consequence, if a result like the Connell anomaly appears, you go back to the dollars and say, this makes no sense anymore. Which I just saw in 2004 when the Greens challenged, all kinds of crazy disappeared in terms of differences between what the tabulator said it was saying versus what different pieces of the recount resulted in. And certainly, when you see that, well, somewhere in that case, there's a problem. I am a huge believer that the best way to run an election and the cheapest way to run an election, because technology has to be replaced every 2 to 4 years, because it basically becomes outmoded and easy to hack within one generation of Moore's Law, is the way Britain does it. You write out a ballot by hand, and then bank tellers, supervised by 3 or 4 people, count them by hand. And guess what? They come out correct with the total every time that there's a mistake, you recount them. In the case of the United States, we have gone down this rabbit hole where our sort of almost bizarre belief that technology improves things, that's just wrong. Technology is a natural tool. Whether it's steel, whether you can make a plow or a sword, it improves evil creatures half the time and good creatures half the time, and they don't care. They are evil or good only based off of programs and uses.
So optical scanners are good or not good?
They have a paper ballot. The paper ballot is good. If you choose then to use optical scanners, you better be ready when an anomaly comes up to go back and count the paper ballot starting. If you have a paper ballot or automate it with optical scan, great. But personally, I think it's just a waste of time and money for everybody, because after 4 years, those optical scanners are so outdated, they're very easy to hack by future computers.
Click your motion says the suspected lead perpetrator of this conspiracy is Karl Rove. What specifically are you alleging that Karl Rove did?
Well, Karl Rove was involved in the Bush campaign for president in the primary of 2000. Our understanding is that when they lost the New Hampshire primary, they were quite concerned. And they made a decision to take the gloves off. And part of taking the gloves off was for Mr. Rove to contact people with whom he had worked in industry, Grover Norquist, on behalf of the tobacco industry. At the time, the tobacco industry was fighting the Clinton administration $260 billion class action RICO case that was a companion to the state action that had recently been settled. That industry alone had a tremendous incentive to spend $1 billion or more than, $5 billion, $10 billion to do whatever was necessary to kill that lawsuit. And George Bush, on Rove's recommendation, was positioned himself as the reformer with results. Not meaning the McCain reform of campaign finance reform, but the Bush reform in Texas, where they changed the composition of the Texas Supreme Court to be business friendly and to effectively immunize corporations from meaningful tort liability.
So they really didn't define results.
They turned these groups loose in South Carolina. They won South Carolina with a lot of independent expenditures and dirty tricks. And then that changed the momentum of the Republican primary. Bush became the Republican nominee. And Bush has been the architect ever since, including sitting in the White House and politicizing all aspects of the government and the political process to undermine the rule of law.
And Rove,
he said Bush was the architect. Well, yeah, Rove was the architect of a strategy to, in effect, undo the rule of law, turn business loose, free of government regulation. That's been the policy. And it's payback for the promise they made. We're the reformer with results. It started in 2000.
Well, what did he do? What did he do? What did he do that related to your specific claim here? Regarding manipulating the vote.
Well, we certainly want to take his deposition. His deposition has never been taken. Mr. Conyers is currently seeking his deposition in regard to what he did, which has been specifically alleged by a person who was told, received direct instructions from Rove.
in terms of going after Governor Siegelman in Alabama. And Mr. Rove is currently evading the congressional subpoena for his testimony.
His email would have been on the same server, created a process, the websites down in Chattanooga that we outsourced the election results to from Ohio. And we do have testimony that suggests that he asked to have the email destroyed on that server. And what we would like to do is to take a look at those emails. Remember, the president and Rove flew in unexpectedly on election day into Ohio, particularly after the reports were that the race was over and you had the unexpected swing at the last second. So we'd really like to look at the emails and wonder why he destroyed those and what he was in fact doing on election day in Ohio just prior.
What did he perpetrate?
Let me go back to right after the 2004 election. A new agent in charge placed in Cincinnati, the FBI, a guy named Stanley Borgia. His background was been the lead investigator in the prosecution of the Buffalo Six. In that capacity, and this is reported, this is known and reported, he was in regular communication with the White House because of the political value and importance of that prosecution. He was moved, after that position, he was moved to head the counterterrorism operations of the FBI in Washington in either October or December of 2004. He was moved to be agent in charge of the Cincinnati office of the FBI. What I would suggest is that Rove's responsible for that manipulation of the staff of the FBI in Cincinnati that had jurisdiction over this investigation that was requested in the aftermath of the election. And all Rove would have to do is say to Borgia that in this sensitive time where we're about to engage in battle with terrorists in Fallujah, and we're about to have elections in Iraq to establish a new constitution, it's not a good time for the FBI to be dignifying the idea that there's been some corruption of this election, George Bush stole the election, and he shut it down. We think that's what happened.
There's numerous reports from Woodward to mainstream magazines, essentially, how Rove led the press to shut down any events in Ohio, particularly recounts any investigation. I mean, contacts at the White House, strangely, Mr. Carville, according to Woodward's book, contacts at the White House, Mary Madeline, and that's when Carl Rove went into the full court press. And we could say, well, that's just politics. You didn't want it to go on. On the other hand, it's, you're flying into the state. Mr. Rove is reported to be the only person who believes that the president should still win. You have a statistically improbable with late recording county in the Southwest where essentially Kerry is running behind an underfunded retired African-American municipal judge from Cleveland and also running behind Democratic sacrificial lamb candidate that should have stimulated immediate, a recount and investigation.
That
would
have been after the fact.
What did he do? He was the architect of the entire process. I mean, he's who's hiring the architect of not only the vote tampering, but of the voter suppression, targeted at African American and young college voters. And there is evidence of this in a documentary film called American Blackout. At the annual meeting of the National Urban League, Bush appears and he asks for the vote of African Americans. And there's sort of a laugh. He says, well, I realize there's a problem here. But he says, I'm serious. I want your vote. I want your support. So then he goes down a long receiving line of all the leaders of the African American community in this country. He gets to Reverend Jesse Jackson. Reverend Jackson says, Mr. President, give me a hug. No, babe, give me a hug. It'll make the news. It'll make the national news. Bush Hudson. He said, I'd like to talk with you about letting my people vote. Bush says, call Karl Rove. He moves to the next person. Jackson pursues him. No, Mr. President, I really need to talk to you. A million of our people couldn't vote in the last election, talking about 2000. Bush says, Jesse, you've got to talk to Karl Rove. He's a big fan of yours. Implicitly, what he's saying is, we're suppressing African-American voters because Rove says it's necessary. And you persuade him it's not necessary, he can let up on it. Rove is at the center, as Bush said, he is the architect of the 2000 and 2004 election, manipulation in 2002, and manipulations in 2006, and he's consulting with the McCain campaign for purposes of manipulating the 2008 election.
And again, remember the crux of this suit, if you're not purging voters in Republican rural counties like Miami County, which is 98% swing in 2004, and you purge 24.93% of every single voter in Cleveland, that raises all sorts of questions of disparate treatment. And the question is, how do we make sure it doesn't happen again? And if we could see it as standard political tactics. But all sources say that Rove is the architect of that strategy.
In Alabama, I saw a recent interview ex-Governor Don Dayman. He states that Karl Rove is behind the political process and then looking at his elections out there. And he indicated that it's a pattern across the United States. Is that what you're assuming, correct?
Yes, we're asserting that we see a pattern of corrupt activity to the level prohibited in the Ohio statutes, and we see Mr. Rove as being at the center.
Secretary Bruner has raised objections in other litigation to pursuing additional discovery between now and the election, saying she's got enough to worry about just trying to run the 2008 election this fall. If she opposes your motion to lift the stay and the stay is not lifted, do you have any other options, or is this your only solution?
Well, from the beginning of our involvement in this process, we have looked at the investigative press corps as an ally. The investigative press corps of this state are the ones who developed the political conspiracy that was involving the various leaders in the Republican Party in Ohio with various corporations illegally trying to assassinate Justice Resnick. That was your story.
Political assassination.
Political assassination. And we have therefore consistently tried to keep the press informed. We advised the court when we told them we were going to seek lifting of the stay. We advised them that we were going to be briefing the press. You know, part of this is if the press sees this as a problem that the public needs to know about, that is another avenue besides litigation. Furthermore, as I said, we have respect for the Secretary of State. I talked with Mr. Cagliarese this morning, and we agreed that Mr. Spudamore will be briefing Rich about the specifics that we see to the target that we want to go after, and if his preference is that he conduct an informal investigation, or that the secretary does it, you know, we're here to cooperate. We're not trying to disrupt. We're not trying to cause problems. We're trying to assist.
And also there's a possibility that Mr. Spudamore may be speaking before Congress and offering his expertise as well. I think once the information is out, it's not going to disrupt anything. It's just going to allow Secretary of State in Ohio and elsewhere to fine-tune the security procedures.
Mr. Cummings was a tremendous assistance to us in the aftermath of the 2004 election, and he's recently said he's very excited about the opportunity to meet with Mr. Spudamore and further. And I expect that we'll be here shortly.
Is he being paid?
At this point, he's assisting us pro bono pro bono.
But you hesitated.
well, if we could raise a budget to compensate them, we would like to compensate them.
No, I just, you know, since 1999, when somebody first came to me with some plans about voting machines, and I told them that they should just give up, because there really is no way to build a secure system of electronic voting. And as I said, the government systems we designed on the planet to settle your credit cards, we understand that we're going to have 16 basis points of error and fraud on a good day. We know that. And, you know, that's not a lot, but that's for something that's run per day by thousands and thousands of professionals looking out for it. Since 99, I've been talking, well, this is crazy. And repeatedly, whenever anybody has asked, I'm offered whatever insights I can offer as to why it's crazy and why it should just be stopped.
When you say 16 basis points.
I had our Help America Steal Votes Act, or whatever the official name of it ended up being, which fundamentally, you know, this is the thing that is still the monkeys, Bob Maine's office, or sorry, convicted felon Maine's office, and
We're not talking about money there. We're just talking about democracy here.
Stephen, thank you very much, and we'll be back with other communication here shortly.
Thank you, Stephen.
Okay.
Bye.
Hello?
Yeah.
All right, you okay? You heard all that?
Yeah, but we weren't able to get Muriel on because in the rush in the last minute. So I'm gonna email this to her. I hope the quality was good enough. I don't know if it was.